Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during February. For most of us, this is the coldest month of the year. So when you're heading outside, make sure you're bundled up warmly. Don't forget your head and feet. And plan to stay out for at least a half an hour to give your eyes a chance to adapt to the darkness. Even after 10 minutes, you'll see far more stars than when you first stepped outside. The month begins with a lovely crescent moon hanging in the evening sky. It maxes out on February 10th, the night of the full snow moon, for rather obvious reasons. Now the moon looks full, that is, its circular disk is completely and uniformly bright, when it's directly opposite the sun in our sky. And on the 10th, that alignment will be especially good. The moon will just skirt through the outer part of Earth's shadow, what's called the penumbra. A penumbral lunar eclipse is kind of a tease because none of the moon actually enters the much darker core of Earth's shadow called the umbra. Still, what will occur on February 10th will be about the best penumbral eclipse possible. The moon's northern limb will miss the umbra by only about 100 miles, so the dusky penumbral shading on the disk will be very obvious. If you live in eastern North America, you'll have a great seat. In the northeast, the whole event is observable, with mid-eclipse occurring at 7:44 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Farther west, the eclipse peaks at or soon after moonrise, or before moonrise if you live in the far west. If you happen to be listening to this from Europe, Africa, or Western Asia, the eclipse occurs with the moon high up during the early morning hours of February 11th. In the days thereafter, the moon rises later and later, gradually leaving the evening sky. But I won't miss it. There are too many other interesting things to look at. Topping that list is dazzling Venus, high in the southwest and just about as bright as it can possibly get. Look a bit to the upper left of Venus to spot Mars. Now, even though these are Earth's two closest planetary neighbors, right now Mars is on the far side of the sun from us. Venus is much closer and it looks much brighter, 200 times brighter, in fact. My Sky and Telescope colleague Fred Schaff suggests that you try a couple of novel observations involving Venus. First, try to spot the planet in broad daylight. It's easier to do than you might think, but you will need a crystal clear sky. The planet is highest up in the sky, toward due south, around 3 p.m. in the afternoon. Look at the spot that's above the horizon by about four times the width of your clenched fist at arm's length. Keep trying, and you should spot Venus as an intense little point of light. Fred's other suggestion is to see whether Venus can create a detectable shadow. For this to work, you'll need a really dark location that's far from any light pollution. Once evening twilight is over, turn in the direction away from Venus and look for your faint but sharp-edged shadow on snow-covered ground or a white wall. If you don't see it, try taking a photo in the dark, without flash, of course, and see if the shadow shows up there. Once it gets good and dark, I know your eyes will be drawn to all the bright stars in the southern part of the evening sky. Most obvious is Orion the Hunter, easily distinguished even through light pollution because of the row of three medium bright stars that form his belt, and also by the bright stars Betelgeuse and Rigel that mark his shoulder and knee. Being a hunter, Orion needs hunting dogs, and that's where Sirius and Procyon come in. To Orion's lower left is brilliant Sirius, the anchor star in Canis Major, the big dog. In fact, Sirius is often called the dog star. Woof! Higher up, directly to Orion's left, is Procyon in Canis Minor, the little dog. Woof! These two constellations faithfully follow the hunter across the sky throughout the night, ready to snatch up his prey. Betelgeuse, Sirius, and Procyon form a beautiful equilateral triangle in the sky, known to stargazers as the Winter Triangle. There's nothing much inside that triangle, as bright stars go, but this is the realm of the constellation Monoceros. Can you guess what it represents? You probably know that mono means one or single, and ceros derives from the Greek word for horn. Now, what has just one horn? Well, it could be a rhino, but that's not very mythical. Aha! Monoceros is the celestial unicorn. This dimly drawn beast is facing Orion. Think of the little dog as riding on its back. Now let's broaden out the view. To Orion's upper right is a bright reddish star called Aldebaran, marking the angry eye of Taurus, the bull. Classified as an orange giant star, Aldebaran is more than 40 times the Sun's diameter, and it's relatively close by, just 65 light-years away. In other words, the light you're seeing now left Aldebaran in 1952, 2 years before Elvis made his first recording. Let your eyes drift a little higher still and look for a small cluster of stars called the Pleiades, or sometimes the Seven Sisters. Look carefully, and you might see six or seven, but there are actually hundreds of stars here. They all formed together about 100 million years ago, when dinosaurs were in their prime. The entire cluster is about twice the size of the full moon, and it looks terrific through binoculars or a small telescope. Over to the left, almost directly overhead, you'll encounter bright Capella, the anchor star in the constellation Auriga. He's a charioteer who moonlights as a goat herder. From there, let your gaze settle back down toward the horizon, and you'll pass the twins of Gemini, Castor, and slightly brighter Pollux. All the stars I've mentioned so far are landmarks in the winter sky. We northerners might still be in the depths of winter, but as evening deepens, you can see hints of the coming spring, at least celestially speaking. Look low in the east around 9 or 10 p.m. and find an odd chain of stars about the size of a clenched fist that looks like a backward question mark. Ancient sky watchers saw this pattern as a sickle, the hand tool used to cut grain and tall grass. The bright star at the bottom is called Regulus, meaning little king. And that question mark is actually the majestic head and mane of Leo, the lion, rearing up in the east. I think of Leo as a distinctively springtime constellation, and given how cold it is right now here in Boston, I can hardly wait for Leo to climb higher in the sky night by night and for springtime to arrive. If you're out late enough, again look toward the east, well below Leo, for the planet Jupiter. It rises a little before midnight early in February, but closer to 10 p.m. at month's end. Don't confuse Jupiter with the bright star Arcturus, well to its upper left. They're about three-fifths apart, and Arcturus rises first. If you want more sky-watching tips, check out skyandtelescope.com. Next month, I'll explain what the dog star of winter has to do with the dog days of summer. Until then, I wish you clear skies.